Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to episode 5 of The Story Studio with your hosts, Luke Condor and Daniel Wilcox. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to The Story Studio, a podcast for an independent publishing company that explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. It's a show for filmmakers, writers, comic book makers, crowdfunders, entrepreneurs, creators, and anyone looking to tell stories in the modern world. My name is Luke Condor with a K, and I'm joined by Mr.
Daniel Wilcox.
And we've got guests today. We've got Frizz on Comics. We've got Katie Whittle and Tom Smith. So if you guys want to say some words so we know what you sound like.
Hi, I'm Tom, and I'm the writer for Free Song Comics.
And I'm Katie, and I'm the illustrator.
Great, cool. How's it going, guys? How's the writing going? How's the creating going? You working on much?
Well, we've just finished writing the next story, and I'm about to put that to a storyboard, and we're about to try and get our second graphic novel out now.
Cool, cool.
That's exciting. That's a sequel to, I'm going to get the title wrong, Leave Only Footprints.
Take Only Photographs, Leave Only Footprints.
Yeah. That's the one.
Okay, yep, cool. Yeah, cool. Yeah, we'll get into that a bit more in detail throughout the show. Dan, how's your writing going?
Yeah, mine's going well. We're sort of whittling away at our projects.
Yeah.
I think I've hit a personal best with my writing this week. I somehow managed 14,000 words in 7 days, which was a personal best for me. So
yeah,
just kind of flying forward with Project Lazarus and getting that off the ground.
I had a personal best as well, but it was like mired by the fact that it wasn't as good as yours. So I got about 13,000, but you know, we're getting there.
That's the point of personal though, isn't it? It's everyone's different.
Yeah. All right. okay. So me too, our big whoops. So
what a big whoop.
Do you guys have a big whoop ready for us?
Yeah, I've got one ready.
Okay, cool.
Well, my big whoop, I guess, is a comic that I've been reading recently called I Am a Hero by Kengo Hanazawa.
Okay.
It's sort of like a zombie horror film. It's been out for quite a while in Japan, but it's just come out over here. And it's like in a first omnibus edition. And it's like supposedly a horror thing, but like no horror comes into it for about 200 pages or something like that. And what I find really interesting is like how it deals with sort of like a sort of very honest representations of like relationships and feelings of sort of self-deprecation and inadequacy and stuff like that, which I found quite interesting from a personal reasons.
who published that?
It's Dark Horse that's done
okay.
It.
Yeah,
published with their label.
Yeah, 200 pages in, there's like no biting or anything yet, or
no, there's like hints towards it, like maybe. Yeah, but it's like literally, I think it's about 300 and something pages, and it doesn't really get going until like right at the end. But it's just like the first, there's like quite a lot more to come out, I think.
Yeah.
But I just really liked how it started and a very slow build.
And, so it's gripping enough to keep you going for those 200 pages?
Yeah, even though it's basically just sort of just his relationship and how he feels in it. Basically, it's about like a manga author who is. He's moved in with his new girlfriend, whose ex is a very successful manga author. and he's having to deal with quite a lot of feelings of inadequacy and stuff surrounding that, and it sort of like feeds into his, I mean, he's already a psychotic before the apocalypse happens, so
right.
It's very interesting for that.
Cool. Katie, have you got any big whoops? It's all right, not.
Recently I bought Through the Woods, Into the Woods by Emily Carroll.
Yeah.
I'd seen it plenty of times on bookcases.
Mm.
Really, it was the cover that made me buy it, just because it's like so beautiful and it's very textured and I don't know, it's just like really creepy and weird and unusual. Like, there's a lot of horror comics out there and there's a lot of fairy tale comics out there.
Yeah.
And some, like, usually, like, it tends to be either very, very sort of like childish or very gory. And this was like a nice mixture of like sort of just very creepy and surreal.
So it's a book. It's a book, right? It's not a graphic novel or a comic book or anything.
No, it is a comic.
Okay, cool.
Is that the one that the stage play and the film are based on?
Not sure.
Because
Yeah.
Is that different? Have I got that wrong?
No. I think that was like a Disney thing that came out.
Yeah.
I might be mistaken there.
It's a different thing. It is a graphic novel. So it's like a collection of fairy tales.
Cool.
Of like the ones that I think she's made herself. And like it is a graphic novel, but it doesn't follow graphic novel format. It doesn't have panels or anything. Like all like the different like storylines are very fluid and they all like go into each other. And
it's
very, very horrible.
Nice.
Mr. Wilcox.
Go on.
No, I was just going to say.
my big whoop is something that I've been watching for a little while. I'm slowly getting through it, but I'm just loving where it's going, is Preacher, which has been obviously originally a comic turned graphic novel turned TV show on. It's Amazon Prime exclusive, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's not like AMC or anything, though. I read the original collection, the first collection of the comics, and I thought it was absolutely bloody and brilliant and wicked and just completely original. And I was really interested to see what happened when they turned it into a TV show, because it's Seth Rogen's executive producer, isn't he?
Yeah.
And obviously he's a bit sort of wacky and stuff, and I wondered what they do with it. And it's one of those shows that's similar to the graphic novel you mentioned, Tom. It's quite a slow build up in making things happen, but it seems very deliberate in taking its time.
Yeah.
And for those people who don't know the premise, it's that a thing comes down out of heaven, goes into the body of a preacher and gives him the power of the Lord, so that anything that he says for people to do, they do. You have another character who's an Irish vampire who's absolutely phenomenal, just a brilliantly bloody wicked character. And then Tulip, who's just an angry kind of manic ex-girlfriend type person. And I was interested to see how it went from the book into the TV show. But they've kind of changed the line of the story a bit to make it fit TV better and fit into a modern world. Because it was originally written in the late 80s or early 90s, maybe.
Yeah, probably say early 90s. I'm not completely sure, something around there.
But, and they've done a fantastic job. It's just brilliant to watch.
See, I'm a massive fan of the comic books. I remember reading those like years ago and sort of losing a weekend to them. And I think I've watched the first two episodes of the TV show, and it's not like I can see why they've done the changes. And I quite like some of like the style and the music and everything that they're using in it. But I mean, until Hair Star comes in it, I don't know if you did. You read about Hair Star? Did you get that far in the story? He's like the neo-Nazi.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I wonder if he's going to come into it.
Spoilers or no spoilers? I think that was a spoiler, so yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
But, I think it wasn't until about episode 5 that the story started making sense. There's a lot of kind of unexplained build-up in the first few episodes, but it's 10 episodes so far, I believe, and I'm just coming up to the final episode and really enjoying it now.
Yeah, because I know there's been some pushback. I think some people aren't happy that it's like changed from the comic books, and some people, you know, happy that it's trying something different and isn't following it completely. I'll give it a go, Dan. I will take your recommendation. So my big whoop is something I can't quite explain, but it's this platform called Steemit. So I'll do my best to explain it. It's it's halfway between a cryptocurrency like Bitcoin, and halfway between...
I can already see their faces.
Yeah, halfway between a social media platform like Reddit. But I don't really understand how currency works, obviously, because the way it works is you post content, and then if you get upvoted and how much you get upvoted by who you get upvoted by, you get paid. So this is amazing to me, because I've seen some people, a friend of mine, Eric, is making about £2,000 for a short story, which is like, is unbelievable. So we're going to experiment with it. I want to get Eric on the show to find out what he's doing, because I've never known people to get paid for short stories generally, and I really love short stories.
So unless it's like £20 and publication in a magazine.
Exactly, yeah. So the fact that this guy is, well, not to be shy about it, he's raking it in. Like, he's seriously making so much money. So
yeah, I've seen the numbers. Quite a few of his stories are sort of quadruple figures, which is absolutely mental, because it just feels like Reddit, but with, like you say, this weird cryptocurrency that I don't understand. I'm waiting for you to make sense of it so you can explain it.
Exclusively for like written, like prose, or is it?
No, so you can post any content. So at the minute, it's a bit of a mishmash. I think it's only been going 6 months. So I think the reason he's probably getting so much payout is because he's an early adopter. And there's not many people on there. So it's just weighing towards him. But there's people doing like photography journals. I'm sure you could do like a weekly webcomic or something. But as far as I can tell, the sooner you get on there and the more, as long as you're posting frequently, you're going to start building up those numbers and start getting some decent money. I've been experimenting, been posting like less than 1,000 word posts, just bits of a short story, like sequentially. And we've only been going 3 days and have made about a tenner or something. It's not massive, but I mean, it's quite exponential in the growth. So if you keep going, who knows, you know, where it will go really. So if you guys do want to do some comic book stuff up there, I don't think there's anyone doing that yet. So,
That's steemit.com.
Yeah, and if anyone out there can explain how it works, how content makes money just by being upvoted.
I watched the intro video to that, and they use a lot of big words that don't appeal to the modern man.
I melted halfway through the intro video.
I feel like it's that kind of, I don't know, Joe, when someone tries to explain something to you and they try to show off how clever they are.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's that kind of thing. So
yeah,
it's worth a shot.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, so we are joined by Frizon Comics. So guys, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you started working together and where you met, what was the first project together and all that jazz?
We both met at work, basically. We both used to work in the same cinema together. I'd never really read comics before until I was probably about 27, and Katie introduced me to them, and I'm more from a writing background, and she's an illustration background, and we both wanted to get work out there, and it just seemed natural that it would be good for us to work together, I think.
What was the comic book that sold you? Like, what comic did Katie show you that made you think, oh, okay, this is pretty cool?
I was always put off by sort of like superhero orientated stuff as a kid.
Yeah.
It never really appealed to me too much growing up. I mean, I used to watch the films and stuff, but it never really bothered me. And she lent me like a selection of what she thought could possibly get me into the medium, which included like Sandman, The Crow, Mouse,
Watchmen.
It kind of goes against the trend, like. But,
It's a basic.
I think that, and then ever since then I started seeking them out on my own, and
Your gateway comic.
It's kind of like hooked since. Moved on to the harder stuff. So.
What about you, Katie? When did you start drawing? I mean, did you start really young? Did you sort of get into it a little bit later on?
I've always drawn really. Like, so I did actually start really young. I've always come up with my own stories and stuff and illustrate them. You know, about like my first ever comic that I wrote, which was when I was 11, still at home. It's in like a little folder. Being the young goth that I was, it's very dark. But yeah, like I've always kind of wanted to go into the comic medium. So I started reading comics when I was about 10. Like, started like buying comics when I was about 13. Yeah. And that sort of pushed my artwork more towards comic making. I did all my GCSE projects on comics. I did my degree on comics. I wrote my dissertation about comics.
Wow. That's cool. So the same question now. Do you remember what the first comic was that you read that sort of turned you onto them?
I had like a lot of sort of like horror magazines as a kid, you know, sort of like ones where you get like free little gooey like Frankensteins and stuff with, and I used to like reading them. But the first proper graphic novel I bought was The Crow, and it was just because I loved the film and I didn't realise it had come from a comic, and I just assumed that basically that, again, most comic books I thought there was going to be superhero stuff, and it was kind of stuff like that that really got me into it. And then, yeah, I started reading Sandman.
Mm.
Like, that really, really got me into the medium. Like, it was just very intelligent and very well thought out.
I think that's a lot of people are under the impression that, like, comics is superhero based or Beano, or they've got a certain idea of it, but it's incredibly literary. Or I mean, it's just as open a medium as prose or films or TV or anything. There's so many like amazing comics out there that just I mean, Dan, you're not a big comic book person, are you? I don't think.
No, I mean, I enjoy the odd one here and there, and I've got a few friends that are massively into them that sort of they'll read something like I've read what the I can't remember which Hawkeye it was, but the latest one that everyone's reading because I was recommended
Matt Fraction one. Matt Fraction,
yeah. And I enjoy this style. I enjoy the medium itself. It's just that normally I will hunt out a book as opposed to a comic, because I was the same. I found that my biggest thing that puts me off of buying comics is the fact that, especially with Marvel and DC, which are kind of have monopolized comics, it seems a big commitment to commit to one character over whatever storyline. There's a lot going to it. So when it came round to a friend introducing me to Preacher, and I've actually just bought the first collection of The Walking Dead because I love the TV show. I prefer those style, I think, a lot more to your sort of shorter superhero ones.
Yeah. So you prefer a graphic novel. You can get in there, get the story, get out. Whereas, I know what you mean. I mean, a lot of these, like, I was trying to explain to Kat, like, the all different Marvel Avengers, and I was trying to go through all the different characters, and she was like, why is Thor a woman? Why is Spider-Man black? And I was trying to, like, it took me like about half an hour to explain to get her to a point where I think she'd be able to read it and sort of enjoy it. So there's a lot of weight behind there.
But I think more and more now you are getting sort of indie comic publishers like yourselves that are creating much more literary stuff. I mean, Take Only Photographs, Leave Only Footprints, which I got right, yeah?
Yeah,
that, when I read that, it was very, it just felt so different because it was away from the superhero genre. And even down to, I've only really got Preacher as a frame of reference, but it felt a lot more grounded, a lot more almost local, and I don't know, like, fulfilling to read.
Yeah.
Comics will look good, people. we tried to stay away from even things within the horror genre as well. I mean, you mentioned Walking Dead. I'm actually a big fan of that, but we kind of wanted to move away from kind of like gore-orientated horror.
Yeah.
And what's something that was like a bit more creepy and maybe a little bit more subtle. I don't know if we achieved that or not.
I definitely did. I mean, I read it a couple of days ago, and it was just one of those that, I don't know, I got quite hooked from the beginning, and it is a bit of a slow burner until you get about halfway through. I don't want to say too much in case like it spoils it for other people, but yeah, you get halfway through and they come back from the beach and the stuff starts happening, and I'm just like, right, this is disgusting. this is horrible. And I generally got quite creeped out by it. But I mean, is it worth you guys telling us a little bit about how that comic came to be, where the idea for that came from?
It is actually based on a little bit on a true story. we actually had a trip to the beach, and I have a habit of I collect things on the beach. I collect all the dead crabs. I do collect all like the barnacles. I collect everything that looked like it was once alive, and I normally take it all home and I make a little pile and then I forget about it. And I did it this one time, and I heard all these noises coming from a bag in our living room. And it was like all these drip, drip noises, and I thought we had a leak. And it just, like, it took me ages to actually find out where it was coming from. I actually did, like, look under all the floorboards. I was, like, putting my ear against all the walls and everything. And it turned out it was coming from this bag, and it was the barnacles alive in. My bad.
And they make a drip dripping sound.
I've never seen this in real life. Is this something that happens?
Actually, if you actually go on the comic, there's a QR code at the end.
I did see that.
If you scan that into your phone, it actually takes you to a video of the genuine barnacles, and it plays the noise that they were making as well.
Well, I know what I'm doing after this interview.
I'm cute personally. I actually really like them. I wanted to keep them as a pet, but maybe for a little bit, but. We actually released them in the end. We actually put them back. We're from Liverpool, so we put them in the Mersey, which is the title of it. We're fine.
Okay. But... I once had freshwater clams in a fish tank, and I'd never seen them alive. And it was the weirdest thing because they don't really come out until night. And I remember coming down at about 2 o'clock in the morning. My house, my bathroom is downstairs, and seeing it basically just looked like snot outside of this shell, and it was crawling along the bottom of the floor. I was like, oh. But they didn't quite make drippy noises, but probably because they were underwater.
Yeah.
I think that the noise that comes from the barnacles is the shell opening and closing, so it sort of makes a popping noise.
Yeah.
That makes the story even more gruesome for me now.
Yeah. So I mean, in terms of influences, when I read it, I got it's a surreal sense of a Kafka story or a Junji Ito sort of story, but unlike those stories, this had a very it felt like the missing episode of the Twilight Zone to me. It was just, you went in there, you introduced a creepy concept, a what if scenario, and then you took it to its conclusion, and it felt like a complete episode to me. It was really good. I mean, I'd like to know who would you say were the main influences of this particular story?
Well, it's funny you should say Junji Ito, really, because that's the kind of thing we were trying to sort of go for. It's where it's sort of a mix of the really horrible, surreal horror, sort of mixed with a really dark sense of humour as well. And it might just be both. Well, I personally find it quite funny, but maybe other people don't. But we're trying to go for a healthy mix of fun humour as well as the genuinely dark horror as well.
Yeah,
there were some. Moment sticks of me is the old woman on the back of the bus.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Yeah.
No, she, you're right, there's little sort of injections of humour in there, but they're quite subtle, so I think they could be missed by some people if it's not read properly, but yeah.
I do think you possibly don't have to find it funny to still get enjoyment out of it.
Mm. I'd say one of the influences as well would be something like League of Gentlemen, where it is genuinely really creepy, but at the same time, quite hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, there's plenty of times in League of Gentlemen where it's really, really uncomfortable and you are genuinely creeped out, and it's not always directly hot, comedy.
Yeah.
That
is a genre in itself, isn't it? There's the one that they did after League of Gentlemen, which was, I thought, was even more terrifying. I can't remember what it's called. Psycho. I found that seriously, it was a horror film in many ways, but it was also ludicrously funny. Yes, I mean, how long did the process take? So you had the idea. Who said this should be a graphic novel?
Well, originally I wrote it in prose as a short story. It's about 12 pages long. I can't remember how many words. And I wrote that basically in the space of a week or so. Originally, I was going to try and submit it just as a short story, just maybe see if anyone would be interested in publishing it. And then Katie approached me, and she's currently doing a master's in illustration. And she's approached me about adapting it into a comic book. So it was quite a good, short, self-contained story, I thought. And then, And I guess you kind of liked it.
You passed it on to me to read originally. And it had a good mixture of emotions in it. It was horrible, but at the same time, you got attached to the characters in the prose story. And I thought the ending was quite sad on it. I genuinely felt quite depressed when I finished it.
Yeah.
But, when you're sort of left thinking about something afterwards.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking about it, and I thought maybe a visual element would be a good addition.
Yeah.
And I was very happy for Katie to do it in her style. If you've ever seen the cartoon When the Wind Blows? It's sort of about these two sort of cutesy old characters, and basically they get an atomic bomb dropped on their village, and it's about slowly dying from radiation poisoning, and it's sort of the contrast of this kind of cartoony sort of like cutesy characters with all these sort of like horrific things happening to them at the same time. And I thought it was like, it kind of like accentuates the horror, and I thought Kate's style would help us to do that quite a lot.
Yeah, it definitely did. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Did you find, because this was your first project working together?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Together, right?
Yeah, it's our first project.
Did you find many points of resistance with... Did Kate, you want to take the imagery in any way that might have detracted from the original story, or was it kind of a smooth process?
Well, I draw them out in my very terrible drawings, like beforehand, on like storyboarding almost. So I think it's fairly smooth. I think, did you say you work well with direction? Or
yeah, I found it quite helpful because like I did actually start my own webcomic a couple of years ago, and I found that I sort of tailored off finishing it off or working on it consistently, just purely because like I think I work better when I've kind of got like a framework to go from. So like him actually, you know, doing a very, very, very basic, you know, sort of panel layout or whatever did help, and it sort of like meant that like I could put like some more crazy panels in there as well, you know, because I could see what did work and what didn't.
Yeah.
Like some of the more experimental panels like are, you know, because maybe like I got to critique how we'd done it and then change it myself.
Which
sounds like a really weird way of thinking, but it does help, definitely.
it's a match made in heaven, because that style does suit that story. I mean, I can't really picture it being any other way, really, and having the same effect. It reminds me, have you ever read The Underwater Welder by Jeff Lemire? Oh, you should check it out, because it's the same kind, it's a similar sort of illustration style. It's a similar sort of What If Twilight Zone style story. I think you'll dig it. Yeah, definitely check that out. So how far did you get when you were like, okay, we need to crowdfund it? We're asking because we are going to be doing some of our own crowdfunding style stuff at some point, and we don't know how to do it.
we didn't really know how to do it either. We kind of like entered into it on a whim. We just kind of did it one afternoon, and we launched it, and we didn't even have like a Facebook page ready, or we didn't have anything. And we set it up, and we're like, how are people even going to know about this?
Yeah. how many did you ask for initially?
And then we kind of like sort of like had to catch up with it, basically. So
yeah.
We kind of like set up a blog and Facebook and all the social media stuff that you do today. In these days, no matter how much you don't want to do it, it's like, I'm not really a massive fan of like Facebook and Instagram and all these kind of things, but you just have to become au fait with it and not be afraid to like put it out there, because I was always worried that, you know, if I'm putting it on my personal Facebook or whatever, people are just going to be sick of me. They're just gonna be like, I'm sick of them begging for money for it or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it helps if you have a strict deadline set for publication and stuff anyway, like before you start, because like I think it helped with us because we like I did have to get this comic finished to hand in as well as
okay, yeah, yeah.
So I did have like a very, very tight deadline. and that sort of helped us formulate like how long we needed the crowdsource for. It helped a lot, you know, with like sort of estimating how long it would take for stuff to get sent out, how long it would take to get
fulfill the deliveries and stuff like that. And I think one of the biggest things that helped is like is that we were very realistic about how much we needed to like be able to get the, because it's basically just to fund the printing. And like you see some Kickstarters that maybe don't get successfully funded, I think a lot of it's because they kind of like have a misconception of how much they're going to be able to fund on it, especially on a first project where you basically coming from nothing. So our plan with it was to sort of like build up a very modest but at least somewhat of a customer base, almost people willing to take risks on new things. And we just said all we want is the money to be able to print it.
So how much would you say for a first project the initial asking price would be?
What we asked for was our target was only 800, because we wanted to get a run of about, I think we planned to do 125, and I think we ended up with 175 of what we managed to raise in the end. Just enough copies to sort of like just get it out there, and then we basically calculated if we managed to sell all those, then we'll have enough to fund the next print run and just carry on going. And that was, I mean, it really depends how many pages you're going for. Like, we wanted to have like quite a professional looking book at the end of it. So I think we went with like, was it one of the more expensive ones, like printing?
No, it was like very reasonable. The printer we went with, just to put a little plug in here, was Comic Printing UK. And
yeah, they're the ones that always come up when I talk to people.
Yeah, well, the guy Rich, who runs it, he's amazing. He like gave us so much guidance, along with, you know, like how to get stuff printed, how many pages we'd need, and, you know, just generally, you know, binding and things like that. You know, he recommended us a lot of things, and even at his own detriment at times, it wasn't just to sell stuff to you. It was just genuinely very, very helpful.
And I can vouch for the quality of those comics, because it was London Film and Comic Con that I met you guys, wasn't it? And
yeah, that's right, yeah.
Granted, that was in a giant inflatable dinosaur costume, but but no, they were really, really sort of professionally printed. They looked like you'd sort of buy in a shop. They were fantastic.
Yeah, we were really impressed when we got them, actually. Like, we'd seen other people that had printed with them, but you always kind of worry until they actually come through the door in that box and you actually get to feel how nice they feel.
Yeah, just in case they don't meet your expectations.
Did you have any hiccups along the way? Like, is there anything that went wrong that you would do differently next time or advise people to be wary of?
Not so much like things that went wrong, but there's like certain things that I would advise people to do in advance, sort of like maybe contacting like blogging websites and stuff. You know, to promote stuff like a lot earlier on. Like, we only did it in the last week, and we did get picked up by a couple of people, and it did definitely help, you know, within the last week or so, getting a couple more like people pledging. So I'd say do it earlier on and just like keep at people, you know, throughout the whole campaign, you know, so you've got a constant momentum.
Because
like, it's what tends to happen is you tend to get like a spike in the very first week, and it dips in the middle, and then you get a spike at the end because you're at the top of the chart again because you're finishing. So you need stuff in the middle. You need to keep out in the middle. You need to promote it more. You need to contact more people to promote it.
Yeah.
And you say that when you started, you didn't have any of your other pages set up. So what was it that was initially went to for your audience? Because you posted on your personal pages, but was there anything else that you kind of used in the meantime to fill that gap?
Absolutely. There actually really wasn't. I mean, Katie's already got like a page and a blog set up for illustration. But I mean, I literally had nothing, and we didn't even. One thing that really does help, actually, is like, we didn't really want to put a video on, because we thought we'd come across as kind of like awkward and not very well. What we do now, but and we would like really thought it would hinder us if anything to have a video on there. But about halfway through the campaign, like after all the people that we knew, had already pledged their money, and we were kind of like, it seemed to be lagging a bit. We put a video on, and even a bad one that we did put up helped us quite a lot, I think.
Yeah.
I think they just want to, you know, sort of like hear from the creators a little bit. I think it's kind of like why people use Kickstarter in the first place, is
the human touch. Yeah.
Well, you know, they can, it's like they're taking a risk on something that they really want to see fulfilled. And, a lot of the times before, you don't have a say in that, do you? You basically have to have the end product that an industry is pushing towards you or something like that.
So, like, when formulating actually what your budget should be, you should take into account, like, the people who are buying from you as well. We put up a stretch goal for when we got an extra £200 on top of our original funding, so we could just, like, give out badges, posters and stickers. And, like, a lot of crowdfunding pages that fail, they don't offer extra things and they don't really tailor towards the people who are actually pledging. Like, it's all about kind of taking the money and they don't really give back enough at times.
Yeah.
But I think you need to look after the people who are actually backing you. And give them credit as well.
And that's something that, what was the, Luke, do you remember when we met in Sheffield? What was the comic that you bought that had all the bonus stuff then?
Oh,
do you remember?
Brethren Born. It was John Late's Kickstarter comic.
Because it definitely adds that little bit of extra something, doesn't it? Because if I feel like if you want to try and help out someone who is indie, who is just trying to start off and make that vision, it is nice to kind of know that you're being cared for as well, that you're being appreciated for your help. So what kind of stuff did you give out as extra?
Well, we got a badge pack made, so everyone who backed a physical copy after the stretch goals were hit got 4 badges. They got a pack of vinyl stickers, and they got an exclusive poster as well. So, yeah, like even at the lowest tier where you got a physical copy where it's £10, you got all those things.
Yeah,
a PDF as well.
Yeah, and everyone got a PDF as well. Everyone who bought a physical copy originally anyway got a PDF, just so that even if their copy got damaged, they still have the PDF version.
Yeah, and just like looking through your Facebook page, it looks like you're doing a lot of like conventions at the minute. Are you? Is that like your ongoing marketing strategy, or is there anything else going on there?
Basically, at the moment, the thing that we're doing is we're trying to see which ones are worth doing and which ones aren't, because what you can sell at a convention really varies between who's running the conventions, who's attending them, what the general goal is towards them. For example, like the one that you met was at the London one. Those ones that run by the Showmasters thing, they're not necessarily the best with small press, because at that one we sold more of Katie's sort of illustration than we did, really. We think we sold about 4 books in total.
Yeah, and you were kind of separated from the rest of the comic section as well, weren't you? You were. I'm not sure why they did, but you had your sort of upper balcony full of comic artists and a few other people, and then you were kind of down on the bottom stalls.
In a way, that was a good thing for us, because Showmasters are terrible at promoting small press. Like, not many people knew that the comic alley was up there at all. I spoke to a couple of traders, and a lot of them hadn't made their table back, and they had a reduced fee as well. So, there's another reason to stay away from Showmasters. They really don't care that much about small press. Like it's more about maybe memorabilia and autographs, which isn't a bad thing. It's just not great for, you know, people who are producing indie work.
Yeah. I think I've heard this is a bit of a common conversation going around at the minute about Comic-Con's not really catering towards comics at the minute, these bigger ones anyway.
It's not doing the term Comic-Con much justice, really, at the moment. It's is more like collectors, pop vinyl cons, really.
Because you guys said you went to MCM as well, didn't you?
We're going to Glasgow in September.
Yeah, because when I went to MCM last year, it was last May at the XL in London, that I found, it was before I met the H&C guys and before I kind of got a bit more clued up on comics and stuff, but they had an entire section that was purely for indie small press comics. And they had some, I don't know, it had everyone clustered together, but there weren't big, big names. They were sort of people who are breaking through the concrete and getting their name out there. And that seemed quite nice, because they were sort of talking together, networking, and at the same time, they were very nice at pushing their stuff and trying to draw you into their mailing list of bonus things. And so I think that one, I mean, that probably might be a bit better to look at than, say, the film on Comic-Con.
Yeah, the one that we're really excited about is going to Thought Bubble in November, because we go there all the time, and, like, the focus is on there is, you know, indie small press.
Is that Leeds, or where is that one?
Yeah, it's Leeds, yeah.
So that's the one, that's the one I was telling you about, where you get to pitch a story for 2000 AD. The terrifying thing that I'm going to try and do,
yeah.
Are you going to try it, Tom?
No. I'm not ready yet.
They are very nice, though. I went a few years ago with a portfolio, and they were very kind about making the best work.
Are you going to do it, Luke? Because you said you were thinking about it.
I really want to, because I really want to write for 2000 AD. I really want to get a future shock done. So I think, you know, I've been on stages before and to varying degrees of success. So I think it would be okay. I just know that I need to do it. I just need to get on stage and do it and it'll be fine. But yeah. I don't know. We'll see how that goes.
Very, very nice. They're very helpful as well. Like, even if they don't take your work, they'll tell you exactly what's wrong with it and what you need to improve. But not in a bad way, in a very good critique way.
Okay, cool. So it's not like Dragon's Den or anything then, right? Because that's what I'm picturing. Cool.
But yeah, do you find in terms of building an audience that cons are quite helpful, or do you do a lot of social media stuff and digital stuff as well that you find is quite good for? Because I'm not, what are your sort of, obviously don't answer if you don't want to, but what are your numbers sort of like for followers and fans?
I mean, obviously
reasonable.
we always want to be like, have more and everything, but you know, we like the cons, we see everyone as like, every con that we do is like an opportunity to like meet people, and even if they just take a business card or a flyer or they check out our website or something, you know, maybe, I mean, we try to get in the process of getting the comic on Amazon at the moment, so I think once it's on there, like, people sort of like see it as almost like a sign of legitimacy if it's on one of the big sites like that. So I mean, like, it all contributes towards, it's all progress in my eyes anyway.
We've had like a lot of very positive feedback about it, which leads me to think that if we did produce another graphic novel, that they would be quite happy to purchase it.
Yeah.
Like, we've had a lot of feedback from people who bought it at conventions who aren't necessarily ongoing fans, but yeah, I think there's a good market for it, and I think that we are building up a subtle base rather than, you know, a screaming fan base.
it's the same with every independent publishing company. I think it's that whole idea of the 1,000 true fans. So just finding those people who really like your stuff, who are going to follow you around and buy more than one book, and I think that's the thing to aim for there, right? Rather than a lot of people who don't really care.
I mean, the thing is, it's kind of hard to get, because there's so much content out there, it's hard to get people to take a risk on something that's just totally unknown to them, basically.
Yeah.
You know, they need, a lot of the time it takes a recommendation from someone, or, you know, it's kind of hard, because we get a lot of people picking it up and looking at it, and you can see, like, they're tempted, but they're just not sure, and you don't want to start doing the hard sell to them and stuff like that at conventions, because that just kind of is then it just scares them away. So you just got to try and for it to happen naturally, I guess.
You should do that thing. I did a job interview as a salesman once, and it was giving out flyers and stuff, and they said, well, the thing you should do is you hand them the book, and as they grab it, you pull them with it back towards you. To, like, lure them in. I didn't get the job because I wasn't willing to do that. But
that sounds awful. I think I pushed the person.
Yeah.
I was giving flyers out at the Comic Con in Sheffield yesterday, and there's just people. They see people giving flyers out, and they're instantly suspicious.
Yeah.
They just think that you're going to try and, you know, you're going to use some kind of con artist. So it's a resort to giving stickers out for free as well. And people were happy to take the stickers, so they took a flyer as well. So
there's something a bit weird about stickers. You could have what is essentially the content of a flyer on a sticker, and people will wear that more proudly than taking a leaflet.
That's totally true as well.
We've got our... Oh, go on, Luke.
No, go on, because I've got a next question, so you go.
Okay, I was going to say, so we're doing our first con on the 1st of October in Lincoln. It's called the Lincoln. Which is the first time that this company, particularly company, has come to Lincoln to do one. But it's got quite a big venue. It's sort of just around the corner to where I work. And I think we're going to get quite a good bit of footfall. What sort of advice would you give us while we're there to help with what we're doing?
Bear in mind, we don't have a comic yet.
No, we have a comic on the way, and we have some books amongst us writers.
Yeah.
We actually did a Comic Con in Manchester before we had the book printed. And we concentrated on trying to get flyers out and build some awareness. And we actually, Katie's still at uni, so she gets discounted printing. So we mocked up some sort of like very basic about 20 pages, I think it was, the first 20 pages of the book, and we're handing them out to people. We actually just giving them out for free, but I think we could have possibly sold them for £1 or £2 possibly if we were, yeah. We were still working at that point, like proper jobs.
I think we should dress Ben as El Marvo.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I think we should go and give out loads of free stuff and just ask for the email addresses, I think. And we've got plenty of free stuff to give out, so.
Yeah.
Hugs.
One of the things I've been recommended to do, but we haven't actually started doing yet ourselves, is starting a mailing list as well, taking people's emails.
Yeah.
Like, I try and engage as many people as you can and tell them about what you're doing,
yeah,
rather than just handing them a flyer, because people just throw them away or don't look at them after the corner. Say that people, when they want to put money towards things, they want to meet the creators and they want to know what it's about from the personality of the creator. So I'd say just be very genuine and engage with as many people as you can.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'll be good, Dan. I think Dan would be really good. He's a charming fellow. So
a lot of my background is actually a bit of a side note for people that don't know. I used to be a chlamydia screener. And that involved going out into nightclubs and trying to convince people to do tests. So I think I'd make it all right as a bit of a salesman.
Yeah.
I think I got a free share, but did that doing that once in a club.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's not a bad freebie. We normally gave away things like whistles and pants.
We should give out a free chlamydia test at the con and see.
I think we should.
See how many people we get. Yeah.
I've got the contacts. I'll see if I can get some equipment.
Cool. So what's next for Frizz on Comics? What are you? I mean, I saw something about not an anthology, but like a collected works or something. It's called Knock Knock. Is that right?
It's a zine that we put together because we noticed when we were doing our Kickstarter that there were several artists actually already on Kickstarter from Liverpool. Like in the comics part alone, there were 3 of us out of 200, which, considering that the Kickstarter spans across the whole world, that's a large amount, really.
Mm.
And there wasn't really a network so much for local artists. So we decided to start contacting people and because we wanted to set up, an easy way for people to contact each other and promote each other.
Yeah.
So that's what Knock Knock is. It's a collected book of stories, illustrations, comics. It's got everything, and it's got fine art in it as well, poetry. No, so it is really, really collective, and it sort of is a way of sort of promoting people and getting people maybe who wouldn't otherwise read this work to read it.
Well, if you need any stories, what we do.
We're doing it as like a quarterly thing, and basically just try to expand our scope every time. The next one's going to be the autumn one. It's like a Halloween themed one, so we're going to be taking submissions on that very soon.
Cool.
If anyone who's listening fancies doing it, then just drop us an email straight to us and just submit stuff, and we're always happy to give everyone's thing consideration. We're pretty open-minded what we include. So
wicked.
Where can people find your email address?
It's pretty easy. It's just frizzoncomics@gmail.com.
And that's frizzon, frizzon.
Yep, yes, that's yep. Right.
Cool. Where can people find the your website, and where can they buy the book and all that jazz?
Well, we have a WordPress. I think that's the main blog that we use for it. But we sell mainly online on comicsy.com.
Yeah.
And it's just a Free Song Comics store on there. Literally cool. comicsy.co.uk/Free Song Comics.
Cool.
And we do have it on Kindle, but it's a bit more expensive than Comixy, so I'd recommend doing it.
Yeah, because of the way that royalty works, that we have to charge more on Kindle. So it's if you want a digital copy, get it off Comixy instead. We get all the money.
Cool.
Less as well. Everyone wins.
Cool. I'll put all of these links in the show notes as well. So So thanks for coming on the show. I mean, you guys. I've seen very lovely people. I really want to meet you in person and shake your hands, and I want to see the comic in physical because I've read the PDF. I've not seen it in real life. But yeah. So thanks again, Dan. Have you got any closing words?
Yeah, no. Just one more question from me: is where did Frizzon come from, or Frizzon come from?
It's like a brainstorming session we had for a comics label, and we decided on it. It's the French word. It actually means like a shiver, which isn't totally unpleasant.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
I like it.
So, yeah. We thought it was quite appropriate for what we were trying to go with in terms of what our content is for the stories and such.
Cool.
Perfect.
I just want to tell listeners, go to www.hawkcleaver.com and check out the Other Stories podcast. Carl, we've got a new editor editing the shows, and the audio quality of the editing has gone up dramatically.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
So, cool. All right.
Thank you very much, guys. Nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.